Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is Red Sox Review on WEEI.
A balk has been called on Porcello. He stepped back off the rubber calling time, but I guess he never got time. And Phil Cuzzi, you probably heard him, said that's a balk. So it is a 3-0 lead for Toronto.
Recapping the Red Sox loss against the Blue Jays.
There's a drive to right field. This is hit pretty well. Mookie going back, looking up, back by the grandstand, and into the bullpen. A home run for Eric Sogard, and it is 6-0 Toronto.
Dial 617-779-7937. Red Sox Review with Brian Barrett on WEEI.
Well, good news today. The Yankees lost, but guess what? Your Boston Red Sox still 8 games behind them in the division. 8 games behind the New York Yankees. You know what's funny today is you just lost 2 of 3 to a Blue Jays team that's payroll is $110 million less than yours. Brian Barrett with you right here on Red Sox Review, number 617-779-7937. I don't know how many teams in Major League Baseball, when their third base coach goes down with an injury, in this particular case, Carlos Fables has gout. He's been dealing with gout. He's been dealing with an ankle injury. He's got a foot issue right now, so he's not able to coach third base. We've known this for a couple of weeks now. And Andy Barquette is now becoming a storyline because this guy is absolutely atrocious at his job. Now, a lot of people within the Red Sox organization have been bad at their jobs this season, but Andy Barquette has been awful. Maybe it's time to think if you're Alex Cora, do you go to somebody else? Because Barquette, what is he doing out there? Do you have Ron Renicki, who's the bench coach, send him out to third base? I know he coached the Angels in terms of their third base, what, from 2000 to like 05 or something like that? So he hasn't done it in a while, but he's got to be better than Barquette. And I get you don't want to take your bench coach away from the bench, but maybe you got to go away from somebody besides Barquette. Or are you just waiting till Fabulous gets back? Because now this is like an issue with the Red Sox. The Red Sox actually have like a legitimate issue with one of their base coaches. This is Major League Baseball. They have an issue with one of their base coaches right now. Like, this is something that is really hurting this Red Sox team. You look at it today. So in that second inning, Jackie Bradley singles, and Andy Barquette decides to send Brock Holt. And the single that Jackie Bradley Jr. hit, remember, if you go back to that second inning, it was into left field, but it was short to left field. Okay, Gurriel, it was basically like he was playing catch with the catcher. It was a very routine throw for him to make. Brock Holt was out by like a mile, not to mention the fact that on top of all this crap, like sending him, Brock Holt gets injured. Injures his hamstring. So now Rafael Devers is dealing with a hamstring injury, and now Brock Holt is dealing with a hamstring injury. And I'm not blaming the injury on Barquette, so don't go crazy. I'm not saying that. But why the hell were you sending the guy? And to make matters worse, just to illustrate how bad your decision was, your player actually got injured as well. I mean, this is an absolute joke in terms of the base running. Now, this team this season has been awful on the bases, but part of it is because of Barquette. I mean, this guy has been absolutely awful. And you think about that in terms of a rally killer, because clearly you couldn't figure out how to get to Stroman, and it looked like that was the inning. The second inning was the inning you were going to do it, right? And maybe it's a totally different game, because if you don't send Holt there, okay, and there's not two outs. Remember, there is not two outs in that particular scenario. There is one out. So it would have been bases loaded with one out with Michael Chavis coming to the plate. And you're figuring to yourself, all right, we got an opportunity here. One out, bases loaded. A lot of different ways to score if the bases loaded, right? The odds of you not pushing a run across in that particular scenario with Chavis, and I get you have the bottom of the lineup, 8-9 coming up, Marco Hernandez. But the odds are bases loaded, one out. You're pushing at least one run across the board. And if you don't come around or come out of that with at least one, then it's really troublesome. And maybe the way the Red Sox have been hitting with runners in scoring position this year, maybe you wouldn't have come away with one, but at least give yourself an opportunity instead of Chavis hitting with second and third in two outs. So that's the clear error that Barquette made today, where he didn't need to do it. I don't understand why you're sending the guy. He was out by a mile. Like, have you not learned your lesson from other things that you've done this season? So your third base coach played rally killer. Like, Marcus Stroman, the scoreless six innings that He pitched today. He should give an assist to Barquette because he ran his team into outs on the bases. That is just indefensible. And look, seriously, you may have to think about taking this guy off at third base because now we're starting to see this. It's not a one-time thing with him because if you go back to remember last week against the Orioles, last weekend, he made a mistake in that game. It was Chavis with an infield single in that particular scenario where he hit it to the right side of the infield and he sent Xander Bogaerts. Remember? He sent Bogaerts on an infield single. He sent him home. And Bogaerts, he was out by so much he was stuck in between third and home. He tried to turn it into a rundown. That's how bad you were in that particular scenario if you're Barquette. And then you go back to a couple of weeks ago against the Rangers where Brock Holt, yes, he runs through the stop sign that Barquette had put up. But remember how late that stop sign was? You kind of say, ah, that's a 50-50 one. And now that you look back, right, because you think about it. So he has this hiccup today when Brock Holt is out by a mile. So he has that one. And then last weekend, he has the issue with Xander Bogaerts where Chavis hits an infield single and he decides it's a good idea to send Xander Bogaerts in that particular scenario. And then you have the issue against the Rangers where you're saying at the time, well, you know what? Holt did run through the stop sign. But now that you look back at it, it was kind of 50-50, okay, if you're going to put the blame on Holt or Andy Barquette. And then you also look at the fact that, well, that stop sign went up there pretty late. And based on things he's done since then, I kind of side with Brock Holt on that one, too. So that's three issues, at least, that I can point to off the top of my head that I can remember that are, like, big issues. And that should not happen with a team in Major League Baseball. Okay, this is stuff you see happen at the high school level. Okay, at the Little League level, you don't see this happen in Major League Baseball, that the third base coach has actually become like a storyline with this team. Like, you thought that your third base coach going down with an injury, dealing with gout and whatnot, that was going to become this much of an issue with this Red Sox team in particular? I mean, really, that is puzzling to me. 617-779-7937 is your number if you want to hop on board here. Brian Barrett with you on Red Sox Review. I also wanted to get to this. So you think about the Red Sox pitchers in general. Chris Sale, Rick Porcello, and like the entire bullpen yesterday, how they struggled against this Blue Jays team. So coming into today, the Blue Jays ranked 26th in baseball in runs. They were dead last in average. They were hitting .222. Their on-base percentage was 29th in baseball at .292. The only team that is worse, if you're wondering, is the Detroit Tigers, who also suck. And their OPS is 27th in all of Major League Baseball. So in like the major categories, they're not in the top 25, not in the top 25. They're in the bottom five of the major four offensive categories, or at least four of the major offensive categories in baseball. And the Red Sox found a way to make them look like the Yankees or the Astros this weekend. Rick Porcello today, five earned over six innings, eight hits. Your ace, the $145 million man, Chris Sale, three earned runs, seven hits in five innings. And, of course, Grichuk got him for the home run in that particular start. Could not figure it out with his slider. Just did not have his slider whatsoever in that game to the point where he was throwing his changeup more than his slider towards the end of that start because he had no feel for his slider. Okay, yesterday, your bullpen gives up seven earned runs. Shawarin is crushed for home runs. Galvis gets them, and Rowdy Tellez gets him, which, oh, by the way, Tellez, this guy kills the Red Sox. What does he have now? Five, six home runs against the Red Sox on the season? And then you think about it from the perspective of Barnes and Brazier. They walked four straight guys yesterday, okay? And this is a team that has the second worst on base percentage in baseball, as I just told you. And they walked four of those guys in a row. Like, listen, this isn't a great lineup. They have the worst average, and they have the second worst on base percentage. So you can throw them strikes in the zone, and they will miss them, okay? They have proven that all season long. This is a Blue Jays team that, let me remind you, they're trying to lose. They're playing all rookies. Biggio, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Tellez is in like his second year, but I think technically he still has rookie status. This is a team that is trying to lose. They are tanking right now. They are building around their young guys for the future, and they come into Fenway Park this week, and they take two of three from the Red Sox. And your ace doesn't show up, Rick Porcello doesn't show up, and your bullpen yesterday can't hold on to a 6-1 lead. I mean, how do you justify what the Red Sox are doing right now? They're 18-19 at Fenway. This is an absolute mess. 617-779-7937 is the number. Let's get to Devin. He's in Riverside. What's going on, Devin?
Hey, how's it going? Absolutely terrible weekend to be a Red Sox fan.
No doubt.
But definitely the bullpen sucked. But mark my words when I say this, the Red Sox will get hot when they have Mitch Moreland back in the lineup.
Yeah, that's a big thing. Getting Mitch Moreland back will be big. And before he went out, he was leading the team in home runs with his 13 home runs. But you know what, Tevin? It really does concern me that he comes back for one game because, remember, it was a quad issue. And then he injures his back. And remember, Moreland's on the other side of 30. I believe, what is he, 32, 33 years old right now. So it worries me in terms of the health. He's been out for a while now. So Moreland, and then he's got to get back. He's got to get back in a rhythm, hitting the baseball. And he was hitting the ball better, really, than he ever had in his career in terms of the power numbers. I get he's had a better average and on-base percentage. But the power numbers were the best they've ever been. So it concerns me with him coming back from that type of injury if he's going to be the same player in the second half of the season, because clearly this is an injury that is really hurting him because he still isn't back with the club.
Exactly, and he's the bat that we kind of need to ump us up in the next couple weeks, couple months. He's the bat that we need that needs to fire us up in time.
Yeah, I appreciate the call, Devin. You can grab his line if you'd like. It's 617-779-7937. Moreland was a big bat in the middle of that lineup, not to mention the fact that over the past couple of days, you realize that Mitch Moreland, he's a gold glove caliber first baseman too, right? I mean, you think about yesterday, one of the plays in the field where Bogarts is in the hole, throws it over Chavis, and Chavis stretches out too early. Now, I don't want to make this about Chavis and how he's not a great defensive first baseman yet because he's just learning the position. But remember, he stretched out too early. If that's Mitch Moreland at first base, he makes that play. So that has been a critical issue to this team in terms of the first base. And you think about it, Mitch Moreland's been dealing with an injury. Steve Pierce is dealing with an injury, and he's doing rehab right now. But remember with Pierce, he was horrible. He was horrible this season before he went down with the injury. So Pierce has not been producing. Moreland is injured. So now you got Chavis in there playing first base. So in terms of what this team thought it had coming into the season at first base, you thought you were going to be good with the platoon of Moreland and Steve Pierce because it worked out for you in the postseason last year. But remember, Steve Pierce is a guy that is now 36 years old, and I get it, he was the World Series MVP, but you wanted to bring him back because of the fact that, oh, it's a sentimental thing, right? He worked out for you last year, but let's really look at Steve Pierce. His career high in home runs for a season is 21. The guy that the Yankees just traded for, Edwin Encarnacion, he already has 22 home runs this season, okay? And we're not even at the midway point of the season. So the guy that you're relying on to come back, you would hope before Mitch Moreland, because he's already doing his rehab stuff, right? Is Steve Pierce a guy that's been a journeyman? He's been a platoon player. There's a reason this guy's been on literally every team in the American League East. So that first base position has been a liability for you since Moreland has gone down, because Chavis doesn't give you the defense that Moreland gives you, and Pierce has been injured, not to mention the fact that Pierce has been absolutely atrocious at the plate when he's actually been with the big club. Now, everybody's always going to love Pierce in this town because of what he did in the World Series, the home runs off Kershaw and whatnot, but that seemed like a sentimental signing to me, and I get it doesn't hurt you long term. It's a one-year deal, whatnot, not a ton of money considering what this payroll looks like, but bringing Steve Pierce back, that move right now is kind of head-scratching. And really, if you look at the value he's provided you this year, that's been like beyond a negative contract. It's been absolutely atrocious. 617-779-7937 is the number. Brian Barrett with you on Red Sox Review. Let's get to David. He's in Florida. What's going on, David?
Howdy. You know, I take back everything I said a few days ago after they beat Minnesota when they took 2 or 3, and I said it could be a turning point. You stole my thunder. I mean, when you were talking about the base running and being thrown out at home, I mean, I didn't see the game, but I heard it on the radio. But I came home and I watched the highlights. And I mean, yes, not only does he get, not only is he thrown out by a mile and a half,
yeah,
but then he pulls his hand
oh,
through.
Yep.
I'd like to know. I'm sure you can look this up somewhere online. Which team has been thrown out the most at home plate? And I guarantee you, the Red Sox are in the top five. And not only that, but the base running in general. I mean, it's preposterous. It's a nightmare. And they're self-sabotaging. The coaching staff is just a bunch of saboteurs. And yes, yesterday's game too. I mean, what is Cora taking Johnson out for after 5 innings when he only gave up one run? I mean, I understand his thinking, but you know,
David, I'll defend Cora in that one. He was kind of laboring, and remember, this is a guy that he was making his second start since coming back from the IL, so they want him to ease into it, and you could tell. You could tell in that last inning that he was starting to labor. So I understand it. Plus, David.
I think he could have gone another inning.
Okay, maybe. But David.
The other day too.
But David, hold on a second. I mean, you have a 6-1 lead. Okay, that's more about the bullpen than it is Cora or Johnson. Right. That's about the arms of the pen.
No, yes, the bullpen was disastrous yesterday. Was disastrous. But again, he overextended them. And Barnes was pitching 2 days in a row. And when you overuse the bullpen because you're so concerned about preserving the starting rotation, I mean, if you're so concerned with tomorrow, you're going to forget about today. And that's what happens when you overuse the bullpen. And they were horrible yesterday, but that's going to happen when they're overused. And I mean, Price last out, he only went 5 innings and he was yanked after 50 pitches. I mean, enough is enough, Cora. If they're not strong enough to go 5 innings and get him in the weight to go 7 or 8 innings, then get him in the weight room. I mean,
going after the sports medicine staff or athletic training staff.
I'm going after everybody on the administration. I mean, yes, the players are one-dimensional, and I said before that I compare them to the San Diego Chargers of the 80s or the Denver Nuggets of the 80s, and they would just have all offense and no fundamentals. It's just so demoralizing. I mean, the name of the game, it's called baseball. It's not called extra base hit. You don't win if you have the most extra base hits in the game. You win by scoring runs, whether it's bunting, stealing, hitting and running, getting the extra guy across. You know, you get him on, you get him over, you get him in. But they just sit back and wait for the extra base hit. And it's just so demoralizing.
Yeah, a couple of good points, David. I appreciate the call. You can grab his line if you'd like it at 617-779-7937. I'm fine with extra base hits. I'm just not fine with running into outs. I don't care. I would prefer extra base hits than bunting guys over. I mean, I'm all for extra base hits, but running into outs at home clearly has become an issue with this team. I don't know what Andy Barquette's doing over there at third base, but he mentioned the bullpen and Matt Barnes pitching on back-to-back games. And this is interesting. So Tom Karen of Nesson, who's called a couple of games this year on WEI, he put this stat out there yesterday, which is absolutely perplexing and shocking to me. So Matt Barnes, when pitching with a day of rest or longer, his ERA is 2.19. When working without a day's rest, so like yesterday on back-to-back days, 8.64 ERA. So you go from a 2.19 ERA if he has at least a day of rest in between outings, if you will, to an 8.64 ERA when he has to pitch on back-to-back days. And that tells me a couple of things as it pertains to Barnes. First of all, we all know that he has 97-98 in terms of the fastball. And think about it from this perspective. How many times have you been watching Matt Barnes pitch this season and you've said to yourself, why is he throwing so many damn curveballs when he has 98-99 in his back pocket? That's something that when I watch Matt Barnes pitch, that aggravates me a lot of times. And until Tom Karen put this stat out yesterday, I didn't put two and two together. And maybe I'm just an idiot for not putting two and two together. But maybe part of the reason that he throws so many damn curveballs all the time is because he has to work so hard for that 97, 98, 99 miles an hour that it's tough to do it on back-to-back days. And Matt Barnes literally has been the most used relief pitcher in the American League in terms of high leverage situations. So you're depending on him doing it each and every night. And it's tough to recover one day, come back out there, throw 97, throw 98. So maybe he's hoping on the second day after he starts or after he comes into the game in a previous day, maybe the next day he's thinking, I don't know if I have 99. I don't know if I have 98. And if I do have 98, 99, maybe I only have 4 to 5 of those, right? Maybe I only have 5 98-mile-an-hour fastballs. That's why, because he has such a great curveball, because it's so filthy, he's hoping, all right, let me try to get through this with my curveball because I only have so many fastballs left. And that's why you kind of can be sympathetic to Barnes because he's had a great season. I understand he's had his struggles as of late, but all in all, you look at the numbers, he has had a great season. Maybe part of it is the guy's just been completely overtaxed, and these numbers that Tom Karen put out there yesterday from Nesson would indicate that this is a guy that maybe is overused. So you think about it, the relievers in the past, like Koji, he had a splitter. That's not so tiresome on your arm, right? It's not going 98, 99 miles an hour. Okay, Mariano Rivera has that great cutter. And Kimbrel was a freak. Kimbrel is one of the best regular season closers in the history of the sport. We all understand what he put us through in the postseason last year. But he's one of the best regular season closers in the history of the sport. He's a freak show. You can't compare guys to him. Not to mention Kimbrel, by the way, just from the body composition standpoint, had those huge legs, right? Barnes doesn't have big legs like Kimbrel does. And Kimbrel's in a different category. Now, he was horrible in the postseason, but he was a great regular season reliever. There's only so many guys that can do it like Kimbrel does every night. Even like Chapman, big, strong guy, right? Matt Barnes isn't built that way, so maybe he's just not capable of going back-to-back throwing a bunch of 98-mile-an-hour pitches, especially when, quite frankly, misses the zone a lot. So that factors into this, too. He's throwing so many damn pitches. Let's get to Jack in a car. What's up, Jack?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. What do you got, man?
So initially I was going to say some stuff about the Red Sox bullpen, but I saw something earlier today. I think after this loss, we're now, the Red Sox being us, I guess, 42-37. Wow.
I think we lost Jack. He must have gone into a tunnel. But I think his point was going to be something about how the bullpen sucks. Appreciate the call, Jack. 617-779-7937 is the number. It's kind of how the Red Sox played this weekend, right? They have the big win on Friday night, and then Saturday they get out to a 6-0 lead, and they disappear. It's kind of like what Jack in the car just did. All right, a lot more to get into. Who do you blame for the way the Red Sox are playing? What does Dave Dombrowski have to do as we approach the trade deadline? How many relievers does he need to have? Because we know that he needs to add to the bullpen, right? But how many relievers do you want to see him add? Does he need to add two? Does he need to add three? Is one going to suffice? How many relievers does he have to add to this team plus? How annoying is it that this Red Sox team is under 500 at home? What are the issues that you see with this team? The number is 617-779-7937. Brian Barrett with you for about the next hour and a half or so. We'll get you a trending coming up in just a second here.
The WEEI Sports Radio Network. You're locked in to the WEEI Sports Radio Network.
Did Holt tweak the hamstring when he was trying to score?
When he ran the third, kind of like he felt it, so he kind of had to slow down.
Yeah. And was that play a little too aggressive?
I mean, we're an aggressive team, so yeah.
You're okay with that?
I'm okay with it.
Is it a bad injury or did
you know? Day to day.
Yeah.
We'll know more tomorrow.
How's the hamstring feeling?
It feels better. Just had a little tightness. Kind of felt a little grab there. Trying to score. Wasn't anything where I was worried about it. It just...
All right, that's Alex Cora and Brock Holt on the hamstring injury that Brock Holt suffered today in the second inning as he was rounding second base. 617-779-7937 is your number. Brian Barrett with you for the next 90 minutes or so here on Red Sox Review. All right, a couple of things to what Cora and Brock Holt said. So to the first part, the hamstrings are now starting to become an issue with this team, right? So Brock Holt said he felt it grab a little bit when he was rounding third base. Now, also you factor in that Devers is dealing with a hamstring injury, and clearly he doesn't look like he can play right now. You saw in the eighth inning the other night when he tied up that game, the one game the Red Sox won in this series against the lowly Blue Jays, you could tell he could not run down the first baseline. So I'm advocating for them to be slow with this thing because hamstrings are something that we've seen in all sports. They tend to linger. So be careful with this thing so you don't have your young rookie all-star level third baseman dealing with a hamstring injury for the majority of the season because you don't want this thing to be something that is prolonged because you guys rushed him back into the lineup. So just make sure that this thing is all right with Devers. I would not like to see him in the lineup tomorrow night because clearly the way that he was running, he did not look ready to play the other night. So hamstrings, whenever you say, all right, I think the guy's about ready, give him 2 to 3 more days after that, okay? And now with Holt dealing with the same thing, hopefully his is not as major as Devers is. And I'm not saying Devers is a major one, but clearly he couldn't run. Hopefully Holt is just like, I felt something, he's fine. That's what I'm hoping for, but who knows? These are hamstring injuries. These are weird. Now, the other thing I wanted to comment on is what Cora said following that. When he was asked, did he do it when he was going home? Obviously he did. I don't know why he needs to ask that question, but nonetheless, I digress. Getting back to the original point is he asked him if he was okay with Andy Barquette, the third base coach, sending Brock Holt. He said, we're an aggressive team. And that was an aggressive move, so he's fine with it. I understand that you want to have your coaches back and whatnot, But I can't imagine that's actually what Alex Cora believes, right? There's no way Alex Cora believes, yeah, we're an aggressive team, that's how we play. There's no way that Alex Cora believes that that was okay, because that clearly was not okay. He cannot be sending a guy in that particular situation. First of all, Jackie Bradley Jr. hits the ball to left field, and we know it's one of the shortest left fields in all of Major League Baseball at, what, 310 feet to the monster. And Gurriel's playing shallow to begin with in left field, and Gurriel charges on the ball, and he's got a good arm out there in left field to begin with, and he was out by a mile. So there's no way that Alex Cora can actually believe, just because you're an aggressive team, that you're okay with sending a guy in that scenario. My only thing is that I give Cora the benefit of the doubt with is he's protecting his third base coach, right? That has to be the case, because Andy Barquette, somebody that is not supposed to be the third base coach. Fabulous right now is dealing with gout, so he's somebody that at this particular point in time cannot coach third base. So maybe he just wants to show support from his coach, because you're not going to come out, Cora isn't, and just say, yeah, that was a horrible decision. Clearly it was. It's not on Brock Holt. It's on the third base coach sending him in that particular scenario. So clearly that was a horrible mistake. And I have to imagine that Cora knows that, and he's already spoken to Andy Barquette about it. That would be my assumption. Now, maybe if Cora really does think that we're an aggressive team and he's fine with that, that's asinine, because that would be just dumb logic to begin with, because you would have had the bases loaded with one out. There's no reason to take a risk that early in the game. Like, you're thinking about it, you get bases loaded, one out. We know that Stroman is somebody that relies on location, throws a lot of balls in the dirt with that sinker and whatnot. You know that you can have a big inning against Stroman. So there's no way in any criteria of the game, any aspect of the game, that you would actually defend sending him right there. It's one thing if it's the bottom of the ninth inning, you're down a run, maybe you take that risk. But even then, right, even then you have one out with the bases loaded. So really, to me, there's no defending that decision by Andy Barquette. And I have to imagine Cora's just defending his guy. There's no way that he actually believes, oh, we're an aggressive team, so we can do this. And I'm not mimicking Alex Cora's voice. I'm just saying, like, there's no way that that's your actual thought process there. Well, let's just be aggressive on anything. That makes no sense to me. The guy made a mistake last weekend sending Xander Bogaerts on an infield single. So, heck, maybe they is thinking, I'm just going to be aggressive, because he sent Xander Bogaerts home when Chavis had an infield single last week. He's out by a mile. He's actually caught in between the bases at that particular point. 617-779-7937 is the number. Brian Barrett with you on Red Sox Review. Let's get to Jack in a car. He's back with us. He wanted to talk about the bullpen. What's up, Jack? You get out of that tunnel, man?
Yeah, sorry about that. I pulled over now so I could talk.
All good. What do you got?
Well, I was just saying, I saw today on, actually when I was listening on 103.7, that the Red Sox, now they're 42-37, but at this point they were 88-36 last year. And I know last year was magical, probably never happened again, may never see a team like that in MLB history again. But would you guys at this point now, I mean, I know the bullpen has its woes, but would you guys, if we get to the trade deadline and, you know, it still looks like we're chasing Tampa and New York's, you know, 8 games ahead, would you guys maybe say, okay, maybe it's time to move on from Benintendi and start looking elsewhere, and not try and rebuild the whole thing from the ground up, but maybe just try and move some pieces and see what other guys can do to help save some money and just try to tax some guys in free agency? Thanks, guys. I'll hang up and listen.
All right. Appreciate the call, Jack. You can grab his line if you'd like. It's 617-779-7937. So I guess the question he's asking is, would you become sellers? Now, specifically with Andrew Benintendi, if you actually think you could get something on the market, now, I wouldn't trade Andrew Benintendi for just like your run-of-the-mill reliever. But if you think Andrew Benintendi, getting rid of him, is going to bring you in like an unbelievable relief pitcher, then maybe. But I don't know who that guy is on the market. Like, is it Felipe Vasquez? Sean Doolittle definitely isn't that guy. Like, you can get relievers for not much. You really can. You don't have to pay much to get quality relievers. Usually that's not the case. So I don't think you're going to need to trade Andrew Benintendi to get like this unbelievable reliever, and I don't see you trading for a starting pitcher, so I don't see how Andrew Benintendi would become available on the market to begin with. I don't see it. And by the way, Benintendi, since he moved to that second spot in the lineup, he's been red hot. This month he has an on-base percentage over 350, and he has an OPS over 800. He's hitting like 317 this month in June. So Benintendi's been really good since he went back to that second spot in the order, which that took, what, 57 games to acknowledge that you were wrong having Andrew Benintendi hit second. Clearly he was not comfortable in that role whatsoever. But in terms of would this team actually become sellers, I don't see it happening, because you've invested way too much money in this team, and you're not going to be so far behind at the break, and at the very least, you're probably going to be sitting in that second wild card spot. So I don't see this team becoming sellers. I really don't. I don't see how it happens, because if you look at the talent, the lineup is fine. And the starting pitching, you're not going to try to upgrade there because you have all this money invested in Price. You have all this money invested in Sale now. And heck, you got all this money invested in Eovaldi, who's been a no-show for you at all this season because of the injuries. Made, what, 4 starts? So you're not going to put a lot into giving up prospects for your starting rotation. Really what you need is just a couple of bullpen arms, and I hope that Dave Dombrowski makes a move sooner rather than later because you needed help like 3 weeks ago and they still haven't addressed that issue whatsoever. They're waiting for Stephen Wright and his knuckleball to get back, and I don't think you can ever depend on a knuckleball. That's just my logic. I know he had great numbers out of the bullpen last year, but remember, that's also a guy that can't pitch when you get to the postseason, so it's great because of the suspension. It's great if he can give you a couple of innings here or there and he can give you some long relief in terms of the regular season. You could definitely use that because these guys are overtaxed. But I don't see this team making a move at the deadline in terms of selling because they're going to be close enough where they're still in the playoff hunt. I don't see them becoming sellers whatsoever. If that was the question. Now, Benintendi in particular, I think that Benintendi, like in the long term, he's somebody that is expendable because you're not going to give him a big contract down the road. So if you look at it, he's somebody that you could think about moving on from eventually, but I don't think it's going to come now at the trade deadline or anything along those lines. 617-779-7937, your number. Let's get to Charlie. He's in Connecticut. What's up, Charlie?
How you doing? Good afternoon.
Good. What do you got?
Well, I want to talk about, like everybody's talking about, the pitching staff.
Mm-hmm.
I've been sitting on this and hoping it wasn't true and not sure, but since day one, opening day when they paraded Sale out there, after he just signed a contract for $150 million, let's just round it off.
Yeah,
that man had been in negotiations for weeks. We know that. And then you send him out here 2 days after he signs a contract. You know he mentally was not set for that game. There's no way. A pitcher has to be totally mentally focused. And that set the tone because when he screwed up, the rest of the pitchers looked and said, look what I'm making and look what he's making. And it keeps creeping back in because even the starters are going to say the same thing. He's making all that, but he wasn't doing that well in the beginning. Now, of course, he's doing great. But now he's down again. I think it's just sitting in their heads. A pitcher has to be a happy, comfortable person to go out on that mound. And none of them are happy because of that starting, opening day start that they gave to Sale with all that money. And it's been sitting there over them the entire season.
Yeah, I appreciate the call, Charlie. You can grab his line if you'd like at 617-779-7937. The first start for Sale, that was more about, because we saw all the guys struggle. Even Price had 2 bad starts to begin the season, or at least 2 not-so-great starts for Price this season to begin the season. That was more about the fact that, and we've acknowledged this several times, is Alex Cora didn't have the guys ready to begin the season. Remember, they wanted to go with this conservative approach in spring training, so they weren't ramped up. And I can't imagine that anybody on the pitching staff and anybody on the team is, like, upset Chris Sale got paid. I really don't think that's the case whatsoever because Chris Sale is one of the guys that everybody likes on this team. So I don't think that has anything to do with it. I don't think they're looking at, oh, well, Chris got paid and I didn't get paid. Well, I don't think that's an issue with them whatsoever. I don't see that being an issue. Now, the one guy you could point to is Porcello could be pissed that Eovaldi got a contract because Porcello has been a good pitcher here for, what, 3.5 years now? No, I understand he wasn't great today. And Eovaldi was a good pitcher for like 3 weeks and they gave him $68 million. Porcello said, I'll take a hometown discount and you wouldn't pay him. So that's the one guy I could see being upset with contractual issues because of the fact that he was asking to take a discount. He wanted to stay here, and you gave Nate Eovaldi a contract because he had a nice run in the postseason, and everything else about Nathan Eovaldi would tell you don't give him an extension. So if you want to look at one guy that could be upset with his contract, I mean, that would be the guy that I would point to. And Chris Sale, I understand that he was negotiating his contract late in the offseason, but you can't tell me that's why he didn't pitch well. Xander Bogaerts got a contract during the season, and ever since then, the guy's completely taken off. He's been the best player on the Red Sox, so I don't put too much into Chris Sale getting the contract to the reason the Red Sox have not been playing well and some of the pitchers being upset. I don't think that's an issue whatsoever, and I wouldn't give Sale that excuse. The fact he got paid, that's why he's not pitching well, that makes no sense to me whatsoever. Now, if you want to debate whether the contract was good or bad, I would tell you that I thought it was horrible at the time. There's no reason to give it to him. The past 3 Septembers, the guys had an ERA north of 350, so I wouldn't have given him the contract to begin with. Made no sense to me, but that's a different conversation. Let's get to Wally in Fall River. What's up, Wally?
Yeah, what's up, Brian? I mean, you just look at this team right now. It's June 23rd. I mean, the bullpen's been, you know, chaotic all season. I mean, you're calling up these guys, Huey, Dewey, and Louie from Pawtucket, and hoping when one of them grabs the bull by the horns and it's a closer. But it ain't going to happen. You seen a real closer the other night with Ken Jelly. He just came in and blew everybody away.
Yeah.
Houston has their bullpen all set up. The same way with the Yankees.
Yep.
I mean, even when Eovaldi comes back, you can't throw him in the bullpen. You know, you're going to have to pamper this guy for a while. But Dombrowski definitely has to make some moves, even with the bench, to beef up the bench, because we're still lousy against left-handed pitching. We got a very poor home record, which is, you know, unbelievable. But Dombrowski, you can't wait 5 weeks to the deadline. You don't want to be 11, 12 games in back of the Yankees. I mean, we just don't have the depth that the Yankees in Houston have.
Yeah, no, I appreciate the call, Wally. You can grab his line if you'd like at 617-779-7937. I think that's the aggravation that a lot of Red Sox fans have right now, is clearly all of us can identify that this team has an issue. And the issue is clearly the bullpen, right? And they keep telling us that it's going to get better internally, right? Oh, wait until Steven Wright gets back. Okay, well, great. Wait until the knuckleballer gets back. They can't pitch in the postseason, and that's going to take care of your bullpen woes. We heard, oh, wait till Hector Velasquez gets back. He can provide some length in the bullpen. Like, Velasquez sucks. Not to mention, you bring him back for one day and he's back on the IL. I'm sick and tired of hearing about these internal solutions that the Red Sox have, because they told us that before the season, and clearly none of them have worked out. Now, Barnes has had a good season, and look, Embry's somebody that was pitching well, but then he got injured, and he threw a bullpen yesterday, and apparently he was irritated by it today in terms of the injury. It was irritated today. He didn't feel great. So that's another concern. When is Embry ever going to get back if he threw a bullpen and then he's hurting? So there's major concerns, and Dave Dombrowski, the aggravation that the fan base has is you have a serious issue. All the fans can recognize it. So why haven't they addressed it in terms of outside sources yet? All right, your number is 617-779-7937. What's the biggest issue you have with the Red Sox right now? How disappointing is this team? Brian Barrett with you for the next hour and 15 minutes or so right here on WEI.
The WEI Sports Radio Network. You're locked in to the WEI Sports Radio Network.
The record at home, the bullpen, so many inconsistencies. How far away are you from where you be a contending team, to be a team that can...
Eight games back.
I mean, is that something you guys feel like you can surmount?
I think so, yeah. But I mean, that's how far we are right now. You know what I mean. You know, that team is playing great. We're close to the other one, but we're still, you know, far from being where we're supposed to be.
All right, that's Alex Cora, the managerial Red Sox on his team right now. How close are you to contending? We're 8 games back. Well, yeah, he's correct from a factual standpoint. He is certainly correct. But in terms of on the field, 8 games seems to be pretty much where you're at in terms of how you've been playing. The Yankees have been the significantly better team. And now you think about that series in London, you're going to have Porcello and Erod going in that series. Man, would you like to have Price and Sale going in that series against the Yankees? So in a couple of weeks, or next week really, Saturday and Sunday, think about if you lose those games to the Yankees. If you get swept, because remember, so far this season, you're 1-4 against the Yankees. And the one time you beat the Yankees was to salvage a 3-game sweep. Remember, you need to salvage one game in that series. Price goes out there on Sunday Night Baseball, and Aaron Boone didn't use any of his great relievers. And CC Sabathia, Fat CC, was on the mound for the Yankees. That's the only guy you've beaten this year out of the Yankees rotation is CC Sabathia. And now the Yankees are getting healthy. Judge is back in the lineup, and I get he hasn't been great since he's been back, but he just got back. And the Yankees lost today, but they did take 2 of 3 from the Astros, as you lost 2 of 3 to the Blue Jays. You figure this is a weekend where you could at least make up one game, right? Because you're supposed to sweep the Blue Jays. Couldn't do that. 617-779-7937 is the number. Brian Barrett with you for the next hour or so here on Red Sox Review on WEI. I want to get to this real quickly. Now, Christian Vasquez has made a tremendous improvement in terms of at the plate. He's been a much better hitter. What is he up to now? 11 home runs, and he hit like 3 all of last year, or 10 home runs rather, and he hit 3 all of last year. Hit the walk-off home run the other night, and he hit the home run off the pesky pole yesterday. So clearly the offense, there's been a great improvement there. Now, in terms of the catching, we've seen him pick off a lot of guys. He's tied for the league lead in pickoffs, so he's been great. We always knew that he had a great arm. But something that caught my eye today is Christian Vasquez working with Rick Porcello. And I get that he's worked with him on multiple occasions. And maybe it was more about Porcello, because Porcello just didn't have his stuff. I mean, he's throwing 89, 90 mile an hour fastballs. So maybe it was more about Porcello just didn't have the confidence, that that's why he kept shaking off Vasquez. But it seemed like to me, for a guy that usually works at a really quick pace, outside of Chris Sale, Rick Porcello is the fastest worker, if you will, out of the Red Sox starting rotation guys. Erod, we know, works really slow, especially if he's pitching poorly. David Price works slow. and Nathan Eovaldi, who knows how he works at this particular point in time. Let's see if we ever see him work again, because, and I was saying he's coming back, but we haven't seen him in a while. But nonetheless, out of the starting rotation guys, Porcello is one of the faster guys. And Porcello was working really slowly today, and he was shaking off a lot of stuff. So either it's Vasquez he's not comfortable with, and I know that he's pitched with Vasquez before, so maybe it's just Porcello was shaking off a lot of stuff today. But for whatever reason, Vasquez and Rick Porcello did not have a good rhythm whatsoever, because he was shaking off a lot of stuff. And maybe it was just the fact that he didn't have 91-92 today for his fastball. He had 89-90, which is concerning to begin with, because we know he doesn't have a power arm. And when you're throwing 89-90, that's BP for Major League hitters. Even a team that comes into this series, the worst hitting team in all of Major League Baseball from an average perspective, and second in terms of on-base percentage. Second worst, I should say, in terms of on-base percentage. But also with Vasquez behind the plate. So yesterday in the seventh inning with Gurriel at the plate, he lets a slider go through his legs, and Mailey's able to score from third base. And that's a routine block that he has to make. That cannot get through your legs. So you give up a run right there if you're Vasquez behind the plate. And then you flip forward yesterday to the eighth inning. One out, runner on first. Vasquez can't hold on to a foul tip on Biggio. Remember, this is when Barnes was struggling. So he gets Biggio a foul tip that Vasquez should have made the catch on. I mean, he should have caught that ball. It's in his mitt. Then Hernandez advances to second on a curve in the ground that Vasquez, there's nothing he could do about that one in terms of throwing Hernandez out. But nonetheless, if you hold on to the ball against Biggio, you're in a much better position, and he's still on first base. But after that, the next pitch to Biggio, he drills one past Brock Holt, so you tie the game up at six, and it's all because Vasquez couldn't hold on to the foul tip. So in that game yesterday, Vasquez, from a defensive standpoint, really struggled. He had a couple of pass balls that were inexcusable. And today, when you watch Vasquez behind the plate, and I know everybody talks about Sandy Leone, and everybody on the pitching staff loves working with Sandy Leone because he calls a great game. Well, today was one of the games that I pointed to with Vasquez behind the plate, and I'm not advocating more Sandy Leone. That's not what I'm trying to do, because I don't like when Leone is back there. I get he's Sale's personal catcher, if you will, but I don't want Leone out there except for Sale, because Sale you can justify having a personal catcher for because he's supposed to be the best guy in your rotation, although that's been priced this season. Like John Lester had Ross. Like, I'm fine with that when it's your best pitcher, but I don't want to see any more of Sandy Leone other than that. But I'm just pointing to the fact that Vasquez today was not in a rhythm whatsoever with Rick Porcello. And then I look back to Vasquez yesterday in that game against the Blue Jays, a game that you needed to have, that you blew that lead. It seemed like in that game, for whatever reason, he had trouble stopping the ball behind the plate. So that's two games in a row that I look at Vasquez, one from a play-calling standpoint and one from like a blocking-the-ball standpoint, just a defensive standpoint, where Vasquez was bad. So we get caught up in the numbers with Vasquez in terms of the offense, and we all know that the arm is great. But that's something I'd look for going forward. Is Christian Vasquez going to be an issue behind the plate? Because in that game, he had a bad night. I wonder now, with the rhythm that he has with some of these guys in terms of the pitch calling. Now, maybe it was just Porcello didn't have his fastball, so that's why he was uncomfortable. That's why he was working slowly. But for whatever reason, Rick Porcello didn't have the typical Rick Porcello rhythm that he has in games. And it could just be on Rick Porcello, but I think you have to put it on the catcher a little bit as well. Because for whatever reason, every time Vasquez put something down, Rick Porcello, it seemed like he was shaking him off. All right, a lot more to get into in terms of what Dave Dombrowski has to do upgrading this team. What'd you make of Rick Porcello's start today? Are you concerned about this Red Sox rotation? We know you're concerned about the bullpen, but is the rotation now something you're concerned about? The number is 617-779-7937. Brian Barrett with you right here on Red Sox Review.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.